Caught a train from Alexandria, just a broken man in flight. Running scared with his devil, saying prayers all through the night. Oh, but mercy can't find him, not in the shadows where he calls. Forsaking all his better angels, that's how every empire falls. The bells ring out on Sunday morning like echoes from another time. All our innocence and yearning, sense of wonder left behind. Oh, gentle hearts, remember, what was that story? Is it lost? For when religion loses vision, that's how every empire falls. He toasts his wife and all his family, the providence he brought to bear. They raise their glasses in his honor, although this union they don't share. A man who lives among them, still a stranger to them all. For when the heart is never open, that's how every empire falls. Padlock the door and board the windows, put the people in the street. It's just my job, he says, I'm sorry, and draws a check, goes home to eat. But at night he tells his woman, I know I hide behind the laws. She says, you're only taking orders. That's how every empire falls. A bitter wind blows through the country, a hard rain falls on the sea. If terror comes without a warning, there must be something we don't see. What fire begets this fire, like torches thrown into the straw? If no one asks, then no one answers. That's how every empire falls. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We're glad that you decided to join us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week from 8 to 10 on Thursdays, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And remember, Revolution Radio is a listener-supported station, so head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio, find that donation button, and use it. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Karen Katowski, Philip Ferrugio, Frank Cordero, and Julius Oliphant. So this Thursday evening we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in northern Minnesota, in Mount Jackson, Virginia, in Yaoundé, Cameroon, in Des Moines, Iowa, and wherever you are. Now available, the October edition of Penn Magazine, The Truth About 9/11 and Sandy Hook. Also poetry by Michael Annis and more. The October edition of Penn Magazine, The Truth About 9/11 and Sandy Hook. Poetry by Michael Annis and more at pennmagazine.us. That's P-E-N-N magazine.us.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio from Port Orange, Florida. You can find Philip all over the internet, including World News Trust and the Greenville Post. And we're pleased to have him with us every week with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Okay, good evening, Working Stiffs. Let's talk about drugged. You don't have to be a genius sometimes to just connect the dots. Since 2012, Big Pharma ads for prescription drugs, especially on the boob tube, has risen by 62%. You cannot channel surf without seeing a myriad of ads pushing every drug out there for almost every condition. Thank God for that law, at least making the Big Pharma predators notify the suckers of the side effects. Meanwhile, let's just mention one statistic from one state, Arizona, when 949 people died from opioids in 1 year, 2017. Here's the interesting kicker. That was a 109% increase since 2012. Now, am I just paranoid, or is there something going on here? Let's see. The legal drug pushes bombard us with drugs help you ads day and night on all the channels. While this is going on, more and more Americans are swallowing opioids, most of the time by prescription. Of course, once they are hooked on these minor league narcotics, they resort to getting them black market if the availability is threatened by any legal means. We all know that one of the largest industries in states like mine, Florida, are these pain clinic mills where corrupt MDs sell their souls for the easy money. Opioid addicts drive from surrounding states, resembling the Depression-era Dust Bowl refugees heading for greener pastures. In essence, what these bombarding big pharma ads have done is legitimize drug use for what ails us. Yes, there are some life-saving drugs needed from some extreme conditions, but they are in the minority. Big Pharma runs the show, as they did a few years ago when they pushed the shit out of those opioid painkillers. Our bought and paid for two-party, one-party politicians did nothing at the time to curb the horror. Now they all, including the Johnny-come-lately president, jump on the bandwagon. Meanwhile, few out there can see the connection I just made between oversaturation of drug ads on television and opioid addiction. The endless propaganda of drugs are good makes it easier for troubled Americans, many in actual physical or emotional pain, to go for the opioid. Imagine if we had real affordable and comprehensive health care. Maybe many in physical and, of course, emotional pain could get the therapy needed to help alleviate things. While on the subject of drugs, especially the legal ones, let's not forget the best one of them all, the election drug. During the turbulent 60s, millions of Americans took to the streets of their towns and cities and peacefully protested our involvement in Vietnam. Now, I won't call it a war, except it was a civil war between the Vietnamese people. This, in fact, got the politicians' attention. The threat of being voted out of office or not getting in office made many of them follow the temperature of the masses. Sadly, when the Bush-Cheney gang prepared for their illegal and immoral invasion of Iraq, there was, yes, a myriad of protests worldwide on one February day. And that was really it. Even after the invasion and occupation of Iraq, we who stood on that street corner each and every Tuesday afternoon were lucky in our town of 55,000 to attract 20 folks each week. Why? Well, the two-party, one-party syndicate kept hammering home the point that change comes only via the ballot box. Just wait and vote, they told us. Sadly, the only media-driven choices were from the same syndicate, and both sides kept voting to increase the spending on phony wars and occupations. Mr. Hope and Change himself presided over the biggest military spending of all time. Thank you.
And now for another episode of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, the view from my Peroshki cart. Grandma Kalashnikov writes on her website her most recent column, Fight the Power or Get Used to Your Shackles. Secrecy is the enemy of the truth. The reason so-called conspiracy theories exist is simply due to government-imposed secrecy forced by the military force and power of government on duped, unwitting citizens. End the secrecy, and you will end most questions, so long as government acts honestly and truthfully and scientifically and ethically. It is dishonesty and corruption and lying and cheating by government which leads citizens to use their constitutionally protected rights under the precious First Amendment to question such lying and cheating and evidently criminal acts by government officials paid by forced taxation of taxpayers. It is lying and cheating by government which fosters all of this. If government behaved honestly and openly with a conscience, there would be no need to question them most of the time. Unfortunately, your government is a pathological liar and cheater and a criminal outlaw, which belongs in a jail cell or at the end of a firing squad. On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, sponsored by Powder Milk Piroshki. Heavens, they're tasty and expeditious. And on the other side of the globe, we now get the view from Uncle Bill's front porch.
I'm here to condemn Obama as a war criminal and worse. University of Illinois is giving him an Ethics in Government Award. This is a sick joke, a demented fraud. The University of Illinois, for its own typical bootlicking reasons, wants to whitewash all of Obama's international crimes. Obama should be sitting in a jail cell in The Hague with the International Criminal Court and not here getting some bogus Ethics in Government Award from the bootlickers of the University of Illinois campus bigwigs. I'm not the only one to say it. What does Professor Noam Chomsky have to say about Obama and his drone murder extermination campaign against Muslims, Arabs, Asians of color all over the world? Here's Professor Noam Chomsky. Particularly to the drone associations, the most extreme terrorist campaigns of modern times, which have killed more than 5,000 people, including U.S. citizens and hundreds of children. That is Noam Chomsky, one of the great intellectuals in the world. That's how Chomsky referred to Obama's drone murder campaign. The most extreme terrorist campaign of modern times. It's amazing to think of. That's the person here that the University of Illinois is whitewashing. That figure today on his drone murder extermination campaign's up to at least 10,000. Trump's just continuing it. Indeed, Trump's just continuing across the board the policies that Obama put in place. The difference between Trump and Obama and Bush Jr. is that, well, Obama knows better. He's a magna cum laude graduate of Harvard Law School. Indeed. Obama murdered four U.S. citizens, at least that we know of, including Mr. Alaki and his 16-year-old son, who was completely innocent of anything. Obama's a monster, a criminal. As I said, he should be in jail, not getting some bogus ethics award from the bootlickers at the University of Illinois administration. Let's review his record. The first thing Obama does when he comes into office, Bush Jr. has, about 26,000 troops in Afghanistan. Obama escalates that immediately by 100,000 troops. 100,000 extra troops, murdering, killing, exterminating Afghans all up and down. We don't even have a body count because the Pentagon won't give us the numbers. My estimate may be 1 million people. Obama's like Genghis Khan and his Mongol horde, raping, robbing, pillaging, and murdering all over the world, innocent men, women, and children. That's the guy they're giving their Ethics in Government Award to. After he'd done his genocidal work in Afghanistan, Obama moved on to Libya in order to steal their oil. Obama launched his war against Libya, exterminated about 50,000 Libyans needlessly for no reason except Obama wanted to steal Libya's oil. Indeed, it was outright genocide for black Africans living in Libya that Obama perpetrated upon them. Obama destroyed Libya as a state completely. It no longer exists. We have the massive refugee crisis coming out of Libya with thousands of Africans, blacks and Arabs, drowning in the Mediterranean, all thanks to Obama, this war criminal. After he was done with Libya, Obama moved on to Syria and destroyed Syria, worked with his jihadi terrorists to overthrow the government of Syria and create a total catastrophe. Maybe 500,000 Syrians have been murdered because of Obama, and that country is a catastrophe today. The battles still go on. We have no idea what's going to happen over there. Just like he did in Libya, Obama used jihadi extremists to wage his wars for him. And America and Libya became the air force for Obama's jihadi extremists. Then he turned them on Syria, and there the death and destruction by Obama goes on today. A second state Obama pretty much destroyed all by himself with his jihadi extremists, Genghis Khan and his horde of Mongols. Now we come to Yemen. Well, massive death and destruction in Yemen right now as we speak today. Obama supported Saudi Arabia and the UAE against Yemen, has killed close to 10,000 Houthis, outright genocide, all to steal their oil. set off a humanitarian catastrophe in Yemen. Maybe 2 million Yemenis over there are suffering from cholera. It's the largest outbreak of cholera in the world today. And they're starving. Obama starved them to death. There's an embargo on them right now. They can't even eat. Obama started this policy. I think we could have no better indication of where Obama really stands than the eulogy he gave last month or whatever in honor of the war criminal and warmonger John McCain. John McCain was a war criminal. He bombed Hanoi, killing innocent civilians when he was shot down. Outright war criminal. When he got home, McCain mongered for every war the U.S. ever waged since then, including Syria, and supporting Obama's Nazis in Ukraine. Let us recall John McCain's theme song, Bomb, 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 Moran. 60 million people. McCain did his best to start a war against them and kill them. Obama then appeared there to give a eulogy in support of this long-standing war criminal and war monger. Let's see, who else was there? Bush Jr., another Genghis Khan and his horde of Mongols. They're best buddies, Bush Jr. and Obama. Who else did they trot out to honor McCain? Well, Henry Kissinger. The three of them, yes, they all spoke right after each other. Kissinger, Bush Jr., Obama. Kissinger at the genocidal Vietnam War, murdering 58,000 young men of my generation, exterminating 3 million Vietnamese. So we have three major warmongers and war criminals honoring a fourth. You have Kissinger, Bush Jr., and Obama honoring McCain. Well, as I say, warbirds of a feather flock together.
The View from Uncle Bill's Front Porch, sponsored this evening by Apple Pie Scented Candles. Find them in the hardware aisle next to the fire extinguishers and plastic Jesus.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by crisis actors of the homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia while they sleep on through the alarm, the house afire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. Construction's underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with a message. Let me put it this way, while 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been since 9/11 accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. We find the president nut standing in the bed of a red 1994 Ford pickup in the Walmart parking lot, speaking to two cart pushers. Two drunk guys and two old ladies waiting in their car for the president to move so they can have the parking spot. This, said the Cosmo, the president nut, is the year of apple pie. Pie, 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 pie. He wanted to sound like there was an echo. He was speaking in a really big place to a lot of people. This will be the continuation of the previous administration's program, Every Town Gets a Shooting, which was meant to be sort of like the Kennedy Declaration of going to the moon in 5 years. Anywho, you'll see terror like you've never seen it before because this is America. Planes whooshing over the stadium, planes whooshing over the feedlot, planes whooshing over the soccer practice, and over people mowing their lawns. It is that time in America, and yes, there will be t-shirts. President Nutt held up a sample t-shirt for the two cart pushers, the two drunk guys, and turned to show the two old ladies in the car behind him the official Year of the Apple Pie t-shirt, which showed two hand-drawn red boobs on a field of white. The old ladies honked loud and yelled, and the drunk guys leaned on the red pickup, staring in at Buzz the Space Dog and Ricardo the Space Cat in the cab like they didn't believe what they were seeing. The cart pushers were just gone. "Okay," said Cosmo the President Nut, putting a clenched fist into the air. "See ya! See ya! See ya!" Join us next week when we will see the Year of the Apple Pie taking root in every town across America.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
I was sitting in Miami pouring blended whiskey down when this old gray-black gentleman was cleaning up the lounge. There wasn't anyone around except this old man and me. The guy who ran the bar was watching Ironside on TV. Uninvited, he sat down and opened up his mind on old dogs and children and watermelon wine. "Ever had a drink of watermelon wine?" he asked. He told me all about it, though I didn't answer back. "Ain't but three things in this world that's worth a solitary dime: old dogs and children and watermelon wine. Old dogs care about you even when you make mistakes. God bless little children while they're still too young to hate." When he moved away, I found my pen and copied down that line about old dogs and children and watermelon wine. Had to catch a plane up to Atlanta that next day. As I left from my room, I saw him picking up my change. That night I dreamed in peaceful sleep of shady summertime, of old dogs and children and watermelon wine.
Message. find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. We're now going to listen to the conversation between Chuck Gregory and Frank Cordero, Des Moines, Iowa, Fort Lauderdale.
Yo, Dick. Chuck.
Hello, Frank.
Where my head is, I was just reading.
Yeah, I'm wondering where the heck is your head now? Oh, wait a second.
Yeah, I gotta shake my head up. Yes, Thursday. I'm locating now to the stairway so I can talk to you. I'm at the Catholic Worker in the midst of folks. Yes. So back into a familiar place. Thursday afternoon, a timeout to talk to Chuck and whoever, an intimate discussion about where we're at here at the Catholic Worker. Who knows who's listening? I understand that the your listening crowd is even more than the 14,000 that we had thought at one time.
Yeah, they're saying Michael put out quite a bit larger. Yeah.
Well, there you are, people. Here we at the Des Moines Catholic Worker. We're yet another day. It's really kind of cold and wet. It's been raining here the last few days, so that's what's going on. I'm in the midst of trying to catch up with a new move. We've done a lot of moves. Sometimes you have to do that within houses to shake the communities up. So I've moved myself back over to the Dingman House. So I live right on top of the house, the first floor where we do all the hospitality and the guests.
Right.
So it's the liveliest place, and you're always on call at one level or another, which is all right. And I'm moving a lot of stuff, trying to go through a lot of stuff, archival stuff, get it off to Marquette University. The whole Catholic Worker movement, starting with Dorothy Day, is being archived by the Jesuits at Marquette.
Man, so that's great.
I'm sending them a lot of stuff, have been over the years. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're looking at in the future next year, we nailed down the privilege to have the Spring Faith and Resistance Retreat. It's an annual thing we do in the Midwest. This year, this coming spring, folks are returning to Des Moines. We're going to do a repeat of what we did in 2014.
which was a retreat to try to draw attention to the drone command center that was to be located in Des Moines, still in the works. Mm. 4 years later, it's very much still now on call and doing its killing. Yeah. So we're going to return. We're doing it the same weekend we did it 4 years ago, the St. Patrick's Day weekend. St. Patrick's Day weekend ends on the 17th. That's St. Patrick's Day on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a weekend retreat. And just today, we lined up Kathy Kelly to be one of our speakers. I'm sure you all, many of your listeners know who Kathy is. She's a well-known Catholic activist who's been to the Middle East as an advocate for the people we've made war on, Iraqis, Syrians, Afghans, Palestinians, Lebanese, Egyptians, all of these countries. Kathy Kelly has been a longtime advocate for the victims of American imperialism, and she, better than anyone I know, can help us get connected with the bombs that we use and the killing that we're doing on the south side of Des Moines with the people that it affects. Because really, that's it's because we can live with this distance in modern warfare that people get away with this stuff. Yeah. How they get away with it here in Des Moines. I mean, any reasonable person who's paying attention, look at their mission, would say, yes, of course, these people are killing people all the time. But no one wants to deal with it. No one. It's the strangest thing. But I've been talking to you guys about this for the last couple of years. So that's going on. But in between then and now, we've got, again, we got the Occupy the World food price. And Reverend Billy's going to be coming out. A rally and concert, and then we do have the Christmas season, which ends with another witness feast of Holy Innocents at the drone command. So the activism is set. We're also in a kind of a building community again after some difficult times, as I have shared before. So currently one of our houses, the Rachel Corey houses, is housing Jessica Resnicek and Ruby Montoya and soon to be Julie Brown. I think Melissa Fuller, a friend of theirs, have moved in too. So they're going to have some space to heal these good women who've been either in the war zones in Kurdistan or in the front lines against the pipeline here in Iowa and risking much. They're taking the time out. So grateful to have these kind of warrior women with us. Hard to tell what they're going to do and what's going to happen, but providing them a space where they feel they can feel they can heal, that in itself is really an important thing to do. So that's something we're doing. And then we're looking for new community members, as we often are. We're stumbling along, trying to keep our heads above water. That's what's going on. Richard Flamer is here till November.
Really?
I talk to him on a weekly basis. And Richard is getting some doctoring done at the vet hospitals here in Des Moines. So he's more than welcome. So give him a shout out. He's living in one of the houses. I live in one. He lives in the other right now. But I just picked him up at the vet's hospital and brought him home. So he's got a new eye, as he says. And they're going to do another one in the next few weeks. So that's what's going on. It's it like cardiac, you know, like old people problems.
Yeah,
cataracts. That's it. The cataract scene. So that's what's going on.
Well, hey,
just
be
another
sure to,
week.
Be sure to say hello to Richard for me.
I will.
You know, he's taking a little bit of a hiatus from our show, and normally we have him on the second week of every month. We have him once a month, but he's taking a little bit of a break, and we're. Certainly hoping to have him back real soon, like maybe as soon as next month. I don't know.
Fair enough. God, he's doing some good stuff down there, so that's great.
They sure do. They sure do.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, thank you so much. It's always good to hear what's going on, and sounds a little bit of upheaval, but the good kind, mostly.
Yeah, yeah, we just muddled through. We're still looking as a community for someone to help us deal with our disputes and disagreements. So,
yeah,
the mending continues.
Okay.
So, thank you. All right, friend. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now we bring you the new American Dream masterpiece, classic playhouse theater, something, something, Real Voices, with a message that you will not hear on the CBS Nightly News.
Mike Prisoner, Iraqi war veteran, Iraq war veteran, the real enemies are not in some distant land. They're not people whose names we don't know, cultures we don't understand. The enemy is people we know very well and can identify. The enemy is a system that wages war when it is profitable. The enemy is the CEOs who lay us off from our jobs when it is profitable. The insurance companies that deny us health care when it is profitable. It's the banks who take away our homes when it is profitable. Our enemy is not 5,000 miles away. They're right here at home. And if we organize with our sisters and brothers, we can stop this war. We can stop this government. We can create a better world.
And now we hear the voice of Philip F. Nelson, author of LBJ, The Mastermind of JFK's Assassination.
Man should be known for what he was, a world-class criminal. Thorough cleansing of the national conscience is in order after all these years to enable Americans to reconcile the personal tragedy suffered by John F. Kennedy and the national tragedy suffered by the country at large at the hands of Lyndon B. Johnson. Till the real story of the 36th president is exposed and the complete truth of his crimes against the United States and the world are acknowledged, there will always be questions lurking about the trustworthiness of the government itself.
And finally, the voice of William Pepper, attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, now attempting to be released from prison for the 1968 murder of Robert Kennedy on grounds that Sirhan was programmed to be a patsy and a decoy for the real killers in the Ambassador Hotel pantry that hot summer night.
The American people have been called by numbers of people all over the world as being the most dumbed-down population in Western civilization. Certainly, they're probably among the least politically and other ways sophisticated people in Western culture. It's no accident. It's no testimony to the lack of intelligence or potential of the citizens of this republic. It's a testimony to the control of thinking and the flow of information that people are allowed to have. The effect of the media and thought control that's been developed in this country is extraordinary, and it's very difficult to overcome. One wonders how long it's going to take for the uprising to occur. And I actually think we may be reaching a point where we're entering a pre-revolutionary stage.
Our next guest of the show is Karen Katowski. Karen Katowski is a retired Lieutenant Colonel in the Air Force. She's an author, a radio show host. You can find her writings at lourockwell.com. She ran for office, House of Representatives, a few years back. She was stationed at the Pentagon on the day, September 11th, 2001. And now we're going to try to contact Karen Katowski in Mount Jackson, Virginia.
Hello?
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike and the new American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
All right. All right. Well, I guess two things that are on my mind today, and I'm not an expert on either one. One of them is the weather, and it has been raining nonstop all summer and spring and fall, since fall's already started, here in the Shenandoah Valley. We've gotten so much rain, and it's raining now. So anyway, I'm getting tired of rain, but rain's a blessing, so I don't want to complain, but it's a lot of rain. So that's one thing that's on my mind. And then, of course, the other thing, and it connects to a lot of things, and I don't know exactly how to really make all those connections, but, you know, we've got this this Kavanaugh thing, which I'm sure other people are talking about. It seems like everybody's talking about it. I know people that actually watched I guess they were watching C-SPAN or whoever was recording, you know, this testimony or whatever it was, and all this issue. And, you know, if you're living under a rock, of course, I mean, I guess, you know, Trump has nominated a quasi-conservative, kind of a statist conservative judge in Kavanaugh. And Kavanaugh is concerning to a lot of people because he, you know, he supported John Yoo. I don't know if anybody remembers him, but you know, a legal advisor to George W. Bush, who advocated any number of unconstitutional actions by the president, believed that they were legitimate, and actually didn't really care that they weren't constitutional because he didn't really care about the Constitution. He said power requires this, and therefore it is legitimate. I'm basically like a legal advisor to a king. And that was John Yoo, and of course, Kavanaugh, very supportive of John Yoo, and was in the administration under John Yoo when back in those days. So that's a concerning thing. And Kavanaugh has not been good at all on the Fourth Amendment, which is our right to be secure in your persons, papers, and effects. And, you know, our modern translation is our protection of our privacy. I mean, privacy is not the word they use, but a sense of having rights over your own property, to include your writings and your the idea of a diary. I mean, this is nothing illegal about it. You know, people who say, "Oh, you have something to hide." Well, why do people lock their diaries? It's not that they have something to hide, but there's something about human beings and the way we operate is, you know, we need space. We need space to think, space to breathe, space to evaluate. To experiment. All this is part of being human, if you want to be human to the fullest extent. So the Fourth Amendment, of course, is very, very, very important. I mean, it goes with the First, you know, the right of saying what you want to say. It's good stuff, and Kavanaugh's not strong on it. He's not strong on it. But if you haven't heard these complaints about Kavanaugh, well, there's a reason why you haven't heard those complaints, because all we're hearing about is something that happened 35 years ago or didn't happen, because there's certainly no evidence that any of it happened, because no one can really remember. They can remember pain and emotional hurt. You know, that's clear from what went on today at the hearings. You know, the first complainant, you know, sounded quite sincere in how victimized she was all those years ago. Couldn't remember many details, but was very victimized and very clearly in emotional pain. I don't think she's an actress, you know, any more than anyone else is an actress or an actor. So, you know, she's in a lot of pain, clearly. I sympathize with her in her pain, but they're filling up the airspace on this confirmation hearing, and they've done it with others, too. With the titillating, with the things that they think will bring people to watch, and clearly they were, because I knew lots of people who said, "Oh, have you been watching?" And no, I have not been watching, but I know what's going on, and what's going on isn't really about someone trying to get justice or trying to report what they think happened to them. It's not about any of that. What it's about is filling up the airwaves with and capturing the attention of the people on things that, quite frankly, are not our business, And, you know, it's not like, "Oh, what do you mean? He could have been an attempted rapist or whatever. What do you mean? How can that not be our business?" Well, it's somebody's business, and it is the business of law, you know. The law should be applied here, you know, not 37 years late. I don't even know whether there's a statute of limitations on rubbing up against somebody. I don't know. But all of this takes up space, and so we don't talk about what we should be talking about, and that is, is the Constitution, and my favorite part of it, of course, is not what's the structure of the government, but the protections that the of our natural rights that the government is supposed to honor and protect, and particularly First and Fourth Amendments are in there, 14th, all these ways that we have learned as a people that we can be better, and we have to value the individual and that individual's choices. These are fundamental. We have a good track record, relatively good track record, of evolving the Constitution towards these directions, and yet we can't talk about any of it. Can't talk about any of it, because all we're talking about is somebody rubbed a body part up against somebody else, and we were all drunk, we barely remember it, and he denies it, and she says it's happened. Could have been the other way around. Maybe he says it happened, and she denies it. It's equal world here. Could be the other way around. But doesn't matter. It's all not our business. Our business should be what is our government in bounds or out of bounds? And our government is certainly out of bounds. Is there any balance between the judiciary and the legislative and the executive? No, there's not. We have a unitary government. Okay? These are things we ought to be screaming about. You know? And if we could do anything about it, might it be to put people on the court who appreciate what has evolved in our country, appreciate the role of things like the Fourth Amendment, appreciate the role of a tension-filled tripartite set of power, you know, the three parts of government that are supposed to have tension between each other, not to support and conform to each other. That's unitary government. That's not what the founders wanted. So these are things we ought to be talking about. We don't have any space to talk about it because somebody put their penis in somebody else's face. I mean, seriously, who wants to talk about, you know, the Fourth Amendment? Who wants to talk about unitary executive power? You know, who wants to talk about where we're going as a country? Who wants to talk about liberty? Can't talk about any of those things because we have a story, and it is a story. It's a fairy tale, okay? Legally, this poor woman, no matter what happened to her, has no case at this point. She has absolutely no case. She was emotionally harmed. I don't even think she was physically harmed because she's not claiming rape. She's claiming he pushed up against me. And we were both drunk, and I don't even remember he was there. I think it was him. Okay, ludicrous. But it's you know, if you were really into conspiracies, you would ask yourself if this whole circus that we are seeing with this confirmation, this potential confirmation of a justice, if it's not even being orchestrated by our own government to keep us from asking the important questions. And I wouldn't be surprised if it ultimately wasn't. Certainly the deep state, both parties, are not interested in asking the hard questions, but they seem to be very interested in looking into all of the titillating stuff. So anyway, that's where we're at, and it's very sad. It's very sad.
Well, that's a very interesting take on this, Karen, and I think you have really got something there.
We're in a rock and a hard place, so how can we talk about what we should be talking about when clearly we have a person who's in pain and another person who may have caused that pain, and this is all playing out before us, you know, it seems so immediate, when in fact what's immediate is the destruction of this country. But we're not allowed to talk about that.
Well, not only are we not allowed to talk about that, but you know, we're being distracted from it in the immediate events now, but over a period of many years, The real rights, you know, the way things are supposed to work hasn't really been taught, and you know, our people no longer appreciate what this country is all about. They are instead trained to be good little employees.
That's right. We're a very good livestock. We're well trained livestock. We know what the signals are. We know how to respond to those signals. And we don't really question it. But here, I'll tell you this one little thing. True fact, talked to a guy the other night. We were chatting about something. I had said something at a government meeting, at a Board of Supervisors meeting, about I said, I teach government classes at local community college. I said, these kids come into class and they don't know the Constitution, have never looked at it, have no idea what's in it, don't know anything about government. Okay, he tells me, he says, I'm friends with Larry Sabato. I went to school with him. You know Larry Sabato, UVA? He's a big, he's a pretty well-known government commentator. He's on Fox, he's on all the stations, MSNBC. Okay. Anyway, Larry Sabato told him the exact same thing. And he teaches at UVA where they get the cream of the crop from students all over the whole entire country. I mean, extremely smart kids at UVA. You know, I'm teaching community college kids, local kids.
Right.
He's teaching UVA kids. No, they've never read the Constitution. He says they don't know that there's three parts of government. They don't know it. So, yeah, we have a big problem. And it's really not who did what at a party 36 years ago. It's far bigger than that. I don't know the solution.
Me either. I sure wish I did.
Yeah, well, if you got any people that you can ever talk to, it's maybe we should just talk about things like, hey, there's three parts of government. They're supposed to balance each other.
Yeah, really.
Throw that out at a party. And see if we can't get people talking about it. Because, you know, it's hard to compete with sex, okay?
Yeah.
It's hard to compete
exactly.
with violence. Yeah. Violence is interesting, yeah. But maybe we can try.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for being on our show every month. And this was an especially informative. They're all informative. You come up with something good every single time. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys every month.
Okay. Well, we will look forward to hearing from you next month, and presumably this guy will either be approved or not by that time. I don't think it'll come on another month.
Oh my gosh. Please no.
Exactly.
Just down to something else next month.
A horrible thought, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Thanks again, Karen. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steiner will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest to the show is Julius Awafong. Julius Awafong joins us each month from Yaoundé, Cameroon. Julius is a student, an activist, a writer. He sends this along to introduce his piece tonight. I am in Bamenda, the northwest region of Cameroon, where the conflict on the Anglophone minority in Cameroon is taking place. I came to conduct some interviews for my master's research, then use the opportunity to talk with someone on the field about the conflict. This is Julius Awafong in Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Hello, Chuck. Hello, Mike. Greetings to you guys and to our listeners over there. Today, I am in the conflict zone of Cameroon, precisely the Northwest region. The Northwest region is one of the regions that constitute the two Anglophone regions of Cameroon, wherein we have the Anglophone crisis. This region is going through a lot of tension now. We have so many internally displaced persons. We have refugees in camps in Nigeria, people who live in the bushes, because of the due to the confrontation between the separatists and the government troops. But today I'm not alone. I've come to visit a lecturer of the University of Bamenda. He is a philosopher, a specialist in bioethics, and a musician. His songs are mostly revolutionary, somebody who hates injustice to its core. So he will be telling us more about his experience in this conflict zone and what he's been seeing and what is happening on the ground. Let's listen to him. Thank you for having us, Dr. B. Jerome Tosam.
Thank you very much, Julius, and thank you for having me. In fact, we are living in very, very trying times where our very existence is under serious threat. In fact, you get up every day and you just thank God that, okay, I've seen a new day, and you are praying very hard to see that you that day ends without any bad news or without anything terrible happening to you, because we are already living in a situation where there are gunshots all the time, everywhere, and the people are traumatized, and a good number of people in the Northwest region as a whole have evacuated the region. They have left the villages in town. The town now is completely empty because of the mounting tension between the separatist forces and the government forces. In fact, I would tell you that on average in the Northwest, I'm not quite versed. I follow up what is happening in the Southwest, but just on average, what we observe around us on a daily basis is not less than 50 deaths per day. It's really a genocide. And the most disturbing issue is that these deaths are caused by those whom we expect them to protect us, by the soldiers. They arrest people, take them to far away places, kill them there, dump them before their families discover that their son or daughter has been killed. The corpses are already bad. They're already
decaying.
Right.
Yeah. Because I've had some exchange with some people around here, and the atmosphere is that people seem to have more confidence. I mean, they feel protected with the separatist movement, and they feel more threatened in the presence of the government forces. And somebody told me that these government forces are generally constituted of Francophones, and there is a hate for the Anglophones. That is why they kill, because they are unable, as we are told, to kill the real, I mean, to confront the real separatists. So they put on their vengeance on the innocent civilians in order to prove to the government that they're doing a good job. What's been your observation about that?
You're right. I think that from observation, a large number of those who are killed are not separatist forces. They are civilians who go about doing their daily businesses. In fact, the way the situation is now, you cannot be neutral.
Yeah.
All right? Mm-hmm. If you are neutral, you are a dead person. So you either leave the place or you become a separatist soldier, mm-hmm, for your own self-protection.
Okay,
for your own self-protection. Just a few days, 2 days ago, we heard about on Monday in Boya, we saw images, yeah, very, very horrible images of two young men who were just killed on the street.
That was the ghost town.
Yes, that was ghost town. Yeah, it was a ghost town.
Somebody said that the separatist forces have instituted ghost towns, and the government troops are reinforcing the ghost town.
Well, I let me just come back to your previous question.
Yes.
Before I address this. Mm-hmm. You were saying that most people are saying they feel comfortable, mm-hmm, with the separatist forces whom according to them, mm-hmm, are protecting them.
Yes.
Yes. But I must underline the fact that there are the genuine separatist forces.
Okay.
That's the category of forces that the people are comfortable with.
Yeah.
But there is a fake one. And that fake one is an extension, mm-hmm, of government forces, mm-hmm, who dress like separatist forces, mm-hmm, without uniforms. They put on some kind of shabby attire and things like that. Their modus operandi is almost similar to that of the separatist forces, except the fact that some of them actually extort, they actually force people to give the money, except that they actually kill people sometimes.
And rape. But, you know, rape but, girls.
And even rape. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that separatist forces have not carried out some exactions mm-hmm. that are actually violations of human rights. Mm-hmm. We've seen images of people being soldiers being beheaded and mm-hmm. things like that. Though they claim that it's a kind of retaliation
exactly.
From what the government soldiers have been doing to the population, mm-hmm. because some people have actually been arrested. Some young people have been arrested and beheaded by government soldiers and things like that. So it is a situation where gradually it may deteriorate into something, because as most people are leaving the towns, even where they are going to, we doubt if they are safe, because the government is already saying that in some Anglophone populated neighborhoods in Douala and Yaoundé, mm. that separatists have infiltrated these neighborhoods, mm. and it has given a kind of a license mm. for young people okay. in some of these neighborhoods mm. to be arrested.
Those from the Anglophone region.
Yes. In fact, today, just the fact that you're an Anglophone, you are tapped a terrorist.
Yeah, that's bad. That's really bad. You are a musician, and we would like to get some, because you've been singing some songs. Let's get some of your songs. So what inspired you to come out with this song?
Well, this particular song is entitled Yeye Politician.
Yeye, what does Yeye mean?
Let's
get the song.
We know the games that you play. Political slandering is your game. Side and rule is your trick. Putting people against each other. Putting the people at loggerheads. Don't wanna be fooled anymore.
Yeah, okay. Now, can you tell us about this, your song, Yeye Politician? What's the message you're trying to pass behind it?
So, what I'm trying to say, yeah, politicians, you know, in Pidgin English, Pidgin English is a Creole that is spoken across West Africa.
Yeah.
And when you are called a yeah man, it simply means you are not a serious person.
Yeah.
And in this song, I'm simply saying, when I say yeah politicians, I simply say politicians who are not serious. Politicians who care only about themselves, about their immediate families, who care only about the here and now. They don't care about the future. They don't care about our common future. And what's characterizing the system is corruption, nepotism, regionalism, ethnicism, and things like that. And largely, it's because of this kind of yeye politics, okay, that has caused the current crisis in which we find ourselves, where a group of people think that everything is for them and nothing for the others. And in this context, when it comes to managing our diversity, they have completely failed, because Cameroon as a bilingual country, that two states that came together in 1961 as equal states in spite of their inequality in population and land size. Mm-hmm. There were two equal states. It's not a question of numbers. Mm-hmm. It's a question of equality.
In two different cultures.
Yeah. And these cultures,
the French and the English speaking
colonial heritage mm-hmm. of these two systems, particularly the English system, has not been respected.
Mm-hmm.
Complete violation of the constitution of 1961, federal constitution.
Yeah.
In fact, I usually refer to what happened in 1972 as a constitutional coup d'etat.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because articles 47 of that constitution stated that the nature of that federal state was it was untouchable.
Yeah.
It was not to be violated. But we saw the machinations and manipulations of the different political leaders that
came to power.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Now our time is running out. What do you think is the way forward in 10 seconds?
If the power in place really want us to stay together, then there's a lot of things that the need for an overhaul of the current system. But gradually, Anglophones are beginning to doubt the possibility because of several instances of failure,
bad faith
from the regime and things like that. And we need, as we speak, the current war taking place, we need an independent mediator to mediate on the issue, because it is already evident the rate of killing, the genocide that is being carried out, without if they have the will to actually sit, if they are not pressured by the international community.
Thank you so much, Doctor, and thank you, Chuk. Thank you, Mike. I'll be leaving this region in the next 2 days because elections are far approaching, and it is purported that after the elections, the town will be so dangerous for people to stay in. Thank you so much. I'll be back next month.
Mike?
And now, a message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Notes we have received from listeners during the first half of our show by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy.
Here is a note from Carl in Carlsbad. Almost immediately after hitting publish on my last article about how the so-called resistance to the Trump administration doesn't actually resist trust Trump's most pernicious agendas in any meaningful way, I saw an awesome video clip proving there's at least one woman out there providing real opposition to Trump where it matters. A think tank is an organization wherein highly paid academics poured their collective brain power into coming up with convincing arguments that would be good and smart to do something evil and stupid. At one such think tank, the Hudson Institute, former John Bolton advisor and current Mike Pompeo lackey, Brian Hook, had his neocon cuddle party interrupted by Code Pink activist Madea Benjamin. Wednesday morning, Benjamin excoriated the director of policy planning for Pompeo's Iran action team, decrying the Trump administration's crippling sanctions following its withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal. "It is the most ridiculous thing I have seen," Benjamin exclaimed while security staff worked to muscle her off the stage. "The world community wants to keep the Iran nuclear deal. Our allies, the Germans, the French, the British, they want to keep in this deal. The world community wants to keep this deal. Let's talk about normal countries. Let's talk about Saudi Arabia. Is that who our allies are? They're the biggest threat to the world community. And let's talk. You're hurting me. You're actually hurting me. I want to ask, do you think these sanctions are hurting the regime or are they hurting the Iranian people? They're hurting the Iranian people. You're making a case for war with Iran. How did the war with Iraq turn out? Doing exactly the same thing as in Iraq. We don't want another war in the Middle East. Let's see. How did Iraq turn out? How did Libya turn out? We have the people of Syria suffering. And how dare you bring up the issue of Yemen? It's the Saudi bombing is killing most people in Yemen. So let's get real. No more war. Peace with Iran." The think tank ghouls chuckled and mocked her, but the damage was done. The video went viral. As a reminder, the Trump administration has not only leveled crippling sanctions upon Iran with the goal of fomenting civil unrest, but has also escalated CIA covert operations led by Trump-appointed officials and cultivated an intimate relationship with the MEK terror cult, which is spearheading a social media propaganda campaign against the Iranian government directed at Western audiences. The Trump administration's approach to Iran is in these ways mirroring the Obama administration's approach to Libya and Syria. It's been called a regime change policy in all but name due to the many unrealistic demands being made of the Iranian government in order to de-escalate. These escalations could easily erupt into direct hot war in the future, especially with this administration being stuffed to the gills with virulent Iran hawks at the highest levels. The Medea Benjamin video is so tasty, I've watched it several times. It feels like it's attuning my cells and reminding me what it takes to put up real-time resistance in this stifling atmosphere of opposition by breaking through the somnolent hypnosis of tribal dynamics. This is what it takes. But this is all it takes. Interrupt our regularly scheduled programming with a burst of truth, and humanity will inevitably rouse a few more from their hypnosis. A few more awake is a few more towards tipping point. While Democrats are holding demonstrations in support of longstanding neocon agendas against Russia, and leftists are gathering to punch racist nobodies in the face, this feisty little Sheila threw her body into the bright lights of the brainwashing machine, jammed it right up until they had to physically remove her. Are we seeing the heart of the anti-war left kick back into life? Well, I sure fucking hope so. Unlike the impotent busy box of Russiagate, this is the resistance to Trump that is real, and it will work. Attacking the Trump administration on their continuation of Bush-Obama's warmongering, ecocidal, omnicidal policies, refusing to fall in line with longstanding neocon agendas, runs interference on the very lifeblood of the parasitic elite that seek to suck the tax dollars of working Americans into murdering humans and fattening Raytheon profit margins. Destroying the war machine fixes everything, from climate change to living standards, terrorism, famine, homelessness, mental health, slavery, plus all the horrors that war always necessarily bursts into the world, such as rape, black markets, human trafficking, refugee crises, and so on, not to mention the butchery of humans for profit, which is what war is. Putting up resistance by breaking the hypnotic effect of war propaganda works. No one actually wants war apart from a handful of powerful elites who fund these think tanks to weave lies and manipulate truth into stories that will manufacture consent for endless military bloodbaths. Simply using the truth to run interference on these lies and spin is enough. Medea Benjamin is my hero. People are going to tell me that she and her organization haven't been exactly 100% perfect on every single issue on every single day. Because this is the left. That's what the left does. But I don't care. Anyone who's willing to throw a hammer in the gears of the machine to any extent is a hero to whatever extent that they did so. Enough of us doing what Medea Benjamin did would bring the entire machine crashing down. Medea Benjamin, thank you. I salute you.
A message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Notes where I've received from listeners during the first half of our show by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy.
I ain't got nobody hanging around my doorstep. Ain't got no loose change hanging around my jeans. If you see somebody, will you send them over my way? I could use some help here with a can of pork and beans. I once had a family, but they up and left me. Nothing but an 8-track, another side of George Jones. I was in high cotton, just a banging on my 6-string, a kicking at the trash can, walking skin and bone. I can see your back porch. If I close my eyes now, I can hear the train tracks through the laundry on the line. I'm thinking it's your business, but you don't gotta answer. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime. Everybody's out there, climbing on the trees now, swinging in the breeze now, hanging on the vine. I'm dreaming about a sailboat. I don't need a fur coat. Underneath the dashboard, got some sweet potato wine. I can see your back porch. If I close my eyes now, I can hear the train track through the laundry on the line. I'm thinking it's your business, but you don't got to answer. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime. Coming up in our next or final half hour of the show, we'll be doing the news from Moonrock Lake, Ohio.
Hey Chuck, you've chosen some John Prine songs for tonight, and you've chosen some ones that I've never heard. I mean, but have you got? I just kind of discovered John Prine not too long ago. You probably knew him from way back, huh?
Well, no, I really didn't. I came across him. Maybe you told me about him. I'm not sure. And so I did a little Google search and, you know, look at some different songs. And, you know, he has an album out right now. I mean, it just come out within the last month or two, called the Tree of Forgiveness. And, that last song I did, Knocking on Your Screen Door, that's from the brand new album.
Oh, that's why I've never heard these before. I haven't heard any of these new ones.
And
that's why.
I really like he's a very good songwriter. I'm glad to have come across him now. All right. I think it's time for our station break. We'll see you all on the other side.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Zero X E 0513. We talk about about decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Moneycoin, your coin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The American dream has dangled before our eyes for over 200 years. The American dream is the goal that we Americans hold on to when everything else is gone. The American dream is our ideal. Too bad it's just a dream. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world waits, wails, fists clenched, tears, eyes blazing, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. Back in the very time that the United States was beginning to attack Iraq for having attacked us on 9/11 and for having weapons of mass destruction, even though there were no weapons of mass destruction, and the one calling for the attack, President George W. Bush, was one of the ones that attacked his own country, not Iraq. Well, back when that was happening, Moon Rock Lake self-published author Solomon Sendak understood just what was happening, and he wrote a book. And the book was going to tell everyone the truth about what was happening, and they would all understand, and there would be no war. And George W. Bush, the president, would become George Bush, the inmate. He wrote the book and self-published it and went driving all around the country to tell everyone about his book. And George W. Bush laughed as he heard about Solomon Sendak's little jaunt around the land. He knew. And he was right. Nobody came to hear Solomon Sendak talk about his book. And nobody read it, or understood it, or cared to read it, or understand it. And we killed the people of Fallujah. And George W. Bush finished out his present thing and retired to a giant home in the Dallas suburbs. Well, Solomon asked us if after all these years, if we'd like to read his book over the air. He said it would take a long time, and maybe nobody will still listen. He asked us if we thought it was important enough to take the time to read. Hell yeah! Cracking shots from the blazing boards of a home on the west side made the chirping robins on the east side look up for just a moment. Were going back to their morning work. The quiet homeland streets lay deserted except for the tired troops marching back to their homes on the east side. If not for the whooshing of the jets scraping the treetops, the west side home might reasonably have been presumed to catch fire from the early morning heat. One of the robins on the front lawn of the Sun God group home appeared to wipe its brow with a wing. The helicopters and bombers, National Guard trucks and welders' pickups forged across the tracks after a long night. Michael M. sat on the edge of the sofa in the group home, hands on knees, clicker pointed at the TV, watching the promotion for the Home Helper Show. M. mouthed along with the announcer, "Residents of Homeland, here is your chance to be on the nationally televised Home Helper Show." Sign up at any quick shop during the summer, be at the Homeland Elementary School Auditorium on Saturday morning, August 12th. And maybe your family home will be included in the new fall season of the Home Helper Show. Get your name in now. Must be present to win, and let's get the lovely young home helper crew of experts on the job at your home for 1 week and miraculously turn your house into the American dream home. The announcer crouched and fired both pointer fingers at the television audience. The Home Helper Show, making the American dream come true. The local weatherman came on to give the work week forecast. His forehead was drenched with sweat. It's going to be hot, hotter than usual this time of year. Commercial showed the close-up spread legs of a naked woman with a cold can of Dr. Pepper on her sweating stomach. For 60 seconds without any audio, M did not hear around him the commotion of the residents getting ready for the morning drive to work. With headphones on her ears, Sandra waved her hands in front of the big side window, a flight deck crew member waving off the approaching starlings before they crashed against the pane. "Okay, let's go," yelled a staffer coming down the hall. "Okay." "Huh?" said M. Radio sitting on the TV set played Christian music from a local station. "What, Jenna? Let's hurry. Gotta get us a move on." And looked around at the people funneling toward the hall. He clicked off the TV, pushed off, and followed. Sandra mumbled to herself. The radio announcer on her headphones was giving the reason that the troops were called to the west side last night. Farmland security agents at the telephone company had reason to believe the rumored alternative bookstore had been found. Downtown, the green National Guard trucks trudged eastward. On the electronic sign outside the brick bank, a message scrolled. "Thank you to our troops for keeping us free." On the Dairy Queen marquee, the sign said, "Over 100,000 evildoers wasted." A worker with a ladder and a box of letters headed out to update the number. Back at Sun God Group Home, the residents milled in the driveway. "They shouldn't have to go to work. It's such a nice day," John said to Al, who had his eyes closed and his chin to his chest. "Okay, move him out." Staff member buzzed into the driveway on his red moped, causing a resident to dance out of the way. M hurried to put on his helmet, pulling the strap tight under his chin. The blue dust metallic flake beauty had been given to him in anticipation of Father's Day. "Whoop! Hi-ya! Ho, ho! Get now! Get along! Get up!" M joined the other staff members on their mopeds, one red, one blue, one yellow, circling the residents, beeping their little horns, revving their tiny engines. Each morning, much like cattle on the range, the residents of Sun God Group Home and the four other group homes in town were driven to the workshop downtown. The social services budget of Homeland had been cut in past months to pay for bullets, guns, uniforms, and camo toilet seats, tanks, and F-16s. The white 15-passenger group home vans had been repossessed by the dealership and converted to prisoner transports for the Homeland City Jail. The group of 11 residents started to shuffle down the sloped driveway to the street, gradually revealing Teresa sitting cross-legged on the driveway, rocking. "Whoop, whoop!" Rosie noticed Teresa and stopped, turned back, and pointed. "Hey, What about her? She said to those nearby. Well, she's having a seizure, someone said. She doesn't have seizures, said Rosie. She sneaked a look at the staff and scurried over to Teresa, who had a big grin on her face, rocking. Rosie leaned over next to Teresa and listened. What'd she say? She's not going. Where? To work, Rosie smiled. Em zoomed up to Teresa. He leaned over with the moped. The sweat from his forehead turned to cement dark gray. He put down his kickstand and stood over Teresa with his hands on his hips. The other two staff members zoomed up, stopped, flipped down their kickstand, and stood behind Teresa with Em as she rocked and smiled with her eyes closed. The staff leader told Em to tell the others they were having problems. We'll get there as soon as we can. We can't get through to the workshop. Phones are busy. You need to get down there, stat. Tell them we'll be there ASAP. Go now. Go, go, go! Sun God be with you! Em wiped his face with his forearm, slammed his light blue flake helmet onto his head, pulled the chin strap tight, loosened it a touch. Then pounced onto his moped. He pressed the auto start red button, revved the motor, used his foot to pivot and took off. He swerved sharply to miss a flushed police officer in a sweaty blue shirt, standing with hands on hips and staring down at Rosie, who was still seated on the warm cement, hands behind her back, eyes closed, and a Mona Lisa smile on her lips. Em leaned left and right, swerved through the mess with a divine purpose. He headed down the street, passing a line of National Guard trucks. At the corner of O Most Holy Warrior Christian School, Em barely slowed to tilt right and turn. He leaned on the throttle and charged right through a blinking red light atop a sign in the middle of the road. Do not enter. The bus is loading. Em touched his handbrake to miss a squirrel. Gunned the engine to beat a turning bus. Looked down to his wrist to check the time. And saw a little girl. She wore a frilly pink dress with white shoes. Toted a light blue backpack. She had a bright smile on her face and a white ribbon in her red hair. Em recorded it all in the instant he realized he was going to kill the child. The girl trotted across the street toward the Christian school, her parents on the other side smiling and waving out the windows of a brand new shiny pitch black Chevy blowjob, and raptured with thoughts of their beautiful child. The girl stopped in the road to turn to wave at her parents with her fat fist, heard the zoom, and looked at Em and smiled. Em smiled back. The girl's father saw that his daughter was going to meet the sun god right that instant, and his mouth froze open, his waving hands spread wide. Em swerved, headed right for the shiny black door. The father's other hand came out the window in an attempt to ward off the zinging moped. Em clenched his front handbrake. He vaulted forward. His blue flake helmet smashed the father in the face, sending him back into the vehicle, spewing blood into the new interior and the mom. Em and his moped bounced back into the street. Em's body ricocheted ahead again. His hand was stuck on the throttle, gunning the engine, and off he flew behind the SUV. The little bike vaulted the curb. His helmet slipped over his eyes. He scattered a gaggle of gray-haired girls sporting new flower dresses, sending them to their hands and knees. Em careened over the grass, headed for the war memorial, an area in the corner of the park with marble statues for each war, plus flags, benches, and flowers. He fought to get his front tire back to earth, threw back his head to clear his eyes, smacked the front tire against a white stone bench. and soared over the handlebars, flying, waving his arms. His mouth and eyes were wide. He ducked his head just as his blue flake helmet rammed World War II. Emma woke with a headache and out of focus black ant on his nose inched forward and disappeared, and felt the concrete on his ear. He saw the world tipped on its side. His helmet cracked to pool of blood under his nose. He wondered if anybody'd seen him. Maybe he could just get up. Nobody'd notice. He still needed to get to the workshop to notify him the morning drive would be a little late today. Oh, my. He's got a bomb. Call the National Guard. He's part of the sit-down rebellion. M pushed himself up to sit. I'm staff, he said, just as he saw his moped was on fire on the lawn. Maroon World War II marble stone he'd hit with his blue flake helmet had slammed against World War I and Korea, which were also broken in pieces in the middle of the concrete pad. Old ladies in the flower dresses were pulling each other up, trying to get grass stains out by sticking handkerchiefs in their mouths and dabbing and rubbing and complaining. M sat back on his hands and watched an ambulance, two fire trucks, and a sheriff's unit squeal up in the street. Suicide bomber! Terrorist! In homeland! He tried to slaughter my entire family! The tall father from the black SUV walked up swiftly, waving his arms. M heard the sound of dozens of feet stomping. He looked down the street between the legs of those around him and saw two lines of National Guard troops jogging his way. Firemen in helmets and yellow suits and lawmen with hands on their firearms sprinted across the lawn toward M. He wiped his nose with his forearm, reached out a hand for a towel or something. Down! 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 A large young man with barrel biceps and a tight brown shirt and flat-top haircut halted just in front of him, spread his feet wide, and pulled his revolver, gripping it with both hands. He held it out straight, pointed at M's bloody nose. Down! M lay back on the powdery cement and chunks of marble facing the sky, his hands flat against his side. I'm okay, really, told the policeman. Nothing broken. Maybe my nose. Over, 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 over! M saw the red face above him, blotches on the neck. M rolled to his stomach, his face flat against the cement, lying in his own blood, his hands flat against his sides. His nose on fire. M heard whoop, whoop, whoop. His hair and the dust on the cement pad blew. Bits of World War II, World War I, and Korea rolled onto the lawn. M heard the trees blowing and waving. The wind pressed on his back and arms. The green helicopter set down on the War Memorial cement pad a few feet from M's head. Leader of the sit-down strike! M heard the policeman yelling to the man from the helicopter. Up! 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 M pushed to a squat. I'm staff! Someone gripped him by his arm, pulled him toward the helicopter. A ring of National Guard troops on one knee circled the perimeter of the war memorial. They leveled automatic rifles at those milling around. The whoosh, whoosh of the helicopter blades fluttered the flower dresses. Red, green, blue, yellow, orange. The old ladies giggled as they fought to keep the dresses down. The men in camo fatigues pulled them onto the helicopter and secured them by straps and harnesses into a seat. M saw his family at the park playground. His wife in a long, loose, clean summer dress, braided hair over her right shoulder, pushed one child on a swing while staring at the helicopter door. Another sat in the sand next to her foot. The helicopter blades whirled faster. The wind waves reached M's wife and kids, blowing their hair. M's wife took one child by the hand and, knowing the other would follow, turned to go. As the helicopter buzzed off over town, M leaned to look out the door. "Careful," said one of his young guards, gripping M's arm. M saw the post office and the flag on the white pole in front. Main Street was lined with sun god flags, each yellow smiling sun on a field of whitest white. There was the playground, the school where tomorrow his oldest would take part in the Memorial Day program. The helicopter shot up like a Ferris wheel, leaving M's stomach behind. He could see the west side, railroad tracks, car-littered yards, glistening skin of varied tones, shacks, grass huts, adobe. He could see smoldering and burning houses, hovels, troops in the streets. He could see the dead and dying in the gutterless barriers. Beneath the whop, whop, whop and the shouting of instructions back and forth between pilot and co-pilot, M heard the familiar squealing of the rendering truck making its run through the streets of the west side, picking up the dead. Feet and hands stuck out the top, blood and intestines oozed down the camouflage side. Running over the white words stenciled in military font on the sides and door, for God, for country, for honor. And leaned back and closed his eyes, trying to make his queasy stomach go away. He was not used to this. He was an average man. He graduated from Homeland Senior High School, married a Homeland girl, had Homeland kids. He was not ugly or good looking. His hair was neither dark nor light enough to draw anyone's attention. He wasn't what you call skinny or fat. He opened his eyes to try to calm his stomach and looked down on his town for the first time. He wasn't tall or short. He hoped nothing he would ever do would be either too great or too terrible. It's what he'd tried to achieve his whole life, until this morning when he saw the promotion for the Home Helper show. He needed to get word to his wife so they could get their names in for the drawing at the elementary gym in August. They could maybe get a deck on their home or make over the kids' room. Perhaps they would install a dishwasher, brighten up the bathroom and kitchen. If he could talk them into a swimming pool, oh my God, his wife would be happy. His children would have good lives. The helicopter was now directly over the west side. The squealing and squeaking of the rendering truck sounded as if it were right below. M had only been across the tracks once in his life, riding along with his father as he drove the truck. They picked up dead bodies of the lazy people who would not work, who would not learn English, who did not worship the sun god. Those people would not mow their lawns or wash their cars. Their churches allowed the words of New Testament Jesus. Radical, fool, heathen, heretic. The helicopter cleared the trees, entered a corn and soybeans planet. And that's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that just about wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio. And remember, it is listener-supported radio. Head on over to freedomslips.com and make use of that donation button. That's what it's for. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thanks, Chuck, to you for all you did to make the show possible, the interviews, the production, the reading, all that. Thanks to our guests, Karen Katowski, Julius Alifong, Phil Ferrugio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you'll find information about all of our regular guests, also the show archives, newdream.us, also Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. If you would like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Kaldash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawkstrong. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
God only knows the price that you pay for the ones you hurt along the way. If I should betray myself today, God only knows the price I pay. God only knows. God only knows. God only knows the way that I feel is only a part of the way I feel. If I can't reveal the way that I feel, God only knows the way I feel. God only knows. God only knows. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. God only knows. God only knows. God only knows. God only knows.
Thank you, everyone. Good night.
See it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat asses, eating and drinking themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out.
Not me.
Get it, Doug.
Revolution Radio. Where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions